Hi, it's Amy Siskin of The Weekly List and author of the book The List, and welcome to episode 39 of The Weekly List Podcast, which accompanies week 121 on The Weekly List website, theweeklylist.org, and corresponds to the week ended March 9th, 2019. Welcome! This was an interesting week because there were all sorts of different sub-themes and a lot of different things happening. The week's news was dominated by an expose by Jane Mayer in The New Yorker on ties between Trump and Fox News and whether our country has its first version of state TV. There was all sorts of fallout from Jane's piece. And then there was a very disturbing story, and this is the second time that we've covered this kind of thing in the weekly list, and that is that our Customs and Border Patrol was keeping a database of journalists and other activists at the southern border. Remember last year we talked about a similar time when the DHS was keeping a list of journalists, another hallmark of authoritarianism. And again, in the chaos, these kind of stories are getting very little coverage. And that is also noteworthy, just the number of things that we're going to be discussing this week that in normal times would be headlines for days and weeks or months and are getting almost no notice. Hence the importance of the list, and also hence why we're so exhausted. And I want to open up with that very theme, because this is super important, folks. The Washington Post, as we've been talking about, has been tracking the number of, well, they call it false and misleading statements, but I'll call it lies to summarize. And Trump crossed over 9,000 since taking office. But the important subtopic of that is the pace is escalating. In his first year, Trump told an average of 5.9 lies per day. In his second year, 16.5. We're now up to 22 lies each day on average. And folks, that takes a toll on all of us. We're all feeling anxious, exhausted, trying to cut through and see the truth. And that is what we're bathed in. And that is, you know, the part that our country has never, we're still getting used to. We're still getting used to the fact that we hear these inconsistencies, these lies, and that there's a consolidation of power. And we're going to be talking about foreign policy too, and some scary happenings there. But I just want to point out the import of that. Other opening stories to consider, The Atlantic reported that we talked about the Cohen hearings last week. House Oversight Chair Elijah Cummings said that the transcript is providing a, quote, roadmap for Democrats to follow. And you started to see this week that roadmap start to unfold as new investigations started to crop up. But that's going to be a theme we're going to be talking about throughout the year. Now, further to that story of the database, a leaked document obtained by a NBC News affiliate revealed that U.S. Customs and Border Patrol kept a secret database tracking 59 journalists and immigration advocates related to the caravans. The database, compiled with the help of Mexican authorities, labeled people as organizers, instigators, or unknown, and said they should be targeted for screening at the border. The database also included 10 journalists, 7 who are U.S. citizens, and included 31 Americans in all. Based on symbols in the database, 12 appear to have been questioned and 9 were arrested at the border. NBC News confirmed that several people in the database had in fact been pulled aside at the border and told they were being questioned as part of a, quote, national security investigation. On Thursday, according to a statement from Customs and Border Protection, the Department of Homeland Security and the House Homeland Security Committee are investigating whether Customs and Border Protection agents targeted journalists for questioning. So folks, ding, ding, ding for authoritarianism. This is really shocking. Another example of authoritarianism, foreign policy reported the State Department rescinded a Woman of Courage Award for a Finnish journalist, Jessica Aro, without explanation, reportedly after seeing her social media posts that were critical of Trump. We spoke extensively last week about Trump's failed summit. NBC News reported just 2 days after that second summit in Hanoi with Kim Jong-un, Photo imagery by Beyond Parallel revealed North Korea is rapidly rebuilding the Long Range rocket site at Soho Launch Facility. And I just, we're going to spend some time this week talking about foreign policy. That's sort of the lead into this list. And we've touched on various elements in this past, but there were so many examples this week of how Trump is unilaterally running our foreign policy to the detriment of our country, how it's put on his own self-interest and his family's self-interest. I call them royal family. Some of you like to call them a criminal syndicate. Either way, it's not clearly in the U.S. interest, and it's not using U.S. intelligence. So let's talk about that. The Washington Post reported, despite ongoing investigations of Trump and his family and the failed North Korea summit, Republicans continue to rally around him. We talked about that last week. That even Sean Hannity is telling his critics, I think they put themselves at great jeopardy. So there's a real, even if they have a disdain of the media and the Democrats as Republicans, they're silent and they're letting this happen. On Sunday, the New York Times reported that following Trump's public criticism of intelligence agencies, intelligence chiefs have revamped their presentations to Trump to focus on what he wants to hear about, which is economics and trade. Intelligence officials giving Trump briefings work to answer his repeated questions of who is winning, meaning what country is making more money. Briefers also use charts and graphs of economic data to try to hold his interest. Trump has also reduced in-person briefings, this is important, folks, to just twice a week. That's very atypical, and that's less than when we started off the weekly list. He gets the briefings by either his DNI, Dan Coats, or CIA Director Gina Haspel, and again, featuring more charts and visual aids to appeal and hold his attention. Trump is easily bored by activists and motivations of secondary foreign officials, and has shown less interest in previous leaders on potential terrorist plots. Why should he care about that? Trump only wants information he agrees with, and that's super important to note as well. The Washington Post reported 2 years in, Trump's national security officials and Republican allies are struggling to defend and explain his haphazard foreign policy statements. The mantra is, it is what Trump says it is in terms of U.S. policy. Trump's foreign policy is described as, quote, part nationalist, part conservative, part isolationist, part militaristic pageantry. Trump distrusts traditional allies like NATO, slapping tariffs on allies and adversaries alike. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has had trouble being in sync with Trump on statements on North Korea. We talked about that last week. Trade negotiator Robert Lighthizer was corrected by Trump in front of Chinese officials in the Oval Office. And then this week, on Sunday, when asked about North Korea's involvement with Otto Wembauer's death on State of the Union, National Security Advisor John Bolton responded, my opinion doesn't matter. Other news related to foreign policy this week, Trump signed an executive order canceling the requirement that U.S. intelligence officials publicly report the number of civilians killed in drone strikes on terrorist targets outside war zones. Adam Schiff called it a troubling retreat from transparency, which is this whole regime is hiding things. But other experts warn that it would give propaganda to Islamic extremists. And again, the importance of Trump not listening to U.S. intelligence and understanding nuance. On Wednesday, Russian President Vladimir Putin said his security forces have nabbed 600 spies during 2018, including 129 officers and 465 agents of foreign intelligence agency. Putin told Russia's state news TASS, just like before, and now probably even harder, foreign intelligence agencies are trying to influence events in our country. Who does that sound like? Trump say the exact opposite of what's actually happening and gaslighting. Putin did not specify countries by name, but just of interest. Remember Paul Whelan? We talked about him many months ago. He is still being held at a detention center in Moscow. And from public appearances, it doesn't appear that Trump is doing anything to get back that American citizen. This was another shocking story on foreign policy. We spoke last week about the fact that Jared, who has his security clearance, questioned made a solo trip to the Middle East and had met in Riyadh with King Salman and Crown Prince MBS. The Daily Beast reported this week that U.S. embassy staffers said Kushner did not include the embassy officials in his meeting, nor did he brief them. Additionally, the Saudi government provided security and handled the entire schedule for Kushner and his entourage, responsibilities that are typically carried out by the U.S. embassy. And again, we know very little about what happened in that meeting, but we do know that Kushner has been pushing to refinance properties and working on deals and so forth, again, not putting U.S. interests first. On Friday, Bloomberg reported the Trump regime is drawing up plans to demand allies, including Germany and Japan, and eventually other countries hosting U.S. troops, pay the full price of American soldiers deployed on their soil. So again, we cozy up to dictators. We're visiting Saudi Arabia. We're not calling them out on killing an American journalist or another American held there. On the other hand, Germany and Japan were punishing. So, you know, again, this is just one of those weeks where lots of stories on foreign policy and lots of stories on the next segment we do each week, which was everyday racism and things happening related to misogyny. On Monday, 21 states and District of Columbia sued the Trump regime over a rule announced in week 119, which would prevent family planning clinics that provide abortion or abortion referrals from receiving federal funds. For the third time, Representative Steve King promoted Faith Goldie, a Canadian white nationalist, in a tweet. Goldie once recommended a book calling for the elimination of Jews and has appeared on the Daily Stormer podcast. On Monday, a federal judge said the Trump regime violated the law when it halted the Obama-era Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's efforts to collect pay data by race and gender from large companies. The judge ordered the regime to reinstate the rules, saying the government had failed to demonstrate the requirement would be meaningfully increase the burden on employers. The Washington Post reported, while Trump invited the NCAA's Division II football champs to the White House, he has not invited any women's championships teams. Obama, George W. Bush, and Bill Clinton did so numerous times. A poster at an event sponsored by the Republican Party of West Virginia, which linked Representative Ilhan Omar to 9/11, sparked outrage. The poster was put up by Act for America, classified as an anti-Muslim hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. On Monday, after tornadoes hit Alabama, Trump tweeted, quote, FEMA has been told directly by me to give A-plus treatment. Alabama, of course, is a red state in contrast to mismanagement by the Trump regime in Puerto Rico and his continuing threats to withdraw funding for various grants to California. On Monday, the Huffington Post reported Trump is advancing young judicial nominees who are members of the Federalist Society and hold ideologies that are extremely anti-abortion and anti-LGBTQ. On Tuesday, the Senate confirmed Alison Rushing, who's 37 years old, to a lifelong appointment to the federal court. Rushing's interned for Alliance Defending Freedom, an anti-LGBTQ group. She was opposed by over 200 civil rights organizations. Several other young judges were also confirmed this week. On Tuesday, a group of male Republicans from New Hampshire wore pearls to a congressional hearing, seeming to mock mothers of victims of gun violence who also attended the hearing. Isn't that classy? On Wednesday, a federal judge ruled Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross violated the constitutional underpinnings of representational democracy by adding a citizenship question to the 2020 census. The judge in federal court in San Francisco also found that Ross made a, quote, strong showing of bad faith by trying to conceal his motives behind the question. The judge also said Ross was fully aware that the questions would result in a census undercount, especially among Latinos, adding Ross engaged in a, quote, cynical search to find an expert who approved of his plan, unsuccessfully. On Wednesday, the House Oversight Committee opened an investigation into Georgia's voting problems, sending a letter to Governor Brian Kemp, who at the time when he ran for governor also served as Secretary of State. Issues under investigation included voter purges and suspensions, malfunctioning and hackable machines, and efforts to close precincts and polling places, all of which have contributed to voter suppression. On Friday, News 4 reported administrators at Sidwell Friends School in D.C. are investigating high school students who included two swastikas and racial imagery in an on-screen presentation made for 500 students. On Friday, Daily News reported school administrators in Bronxville, New York, are investigating an allegation that a teacher held a fake auction in which her white students bid on black students pretending to be slaves. That's the second in 3 weeks kind of story we reported. Remember, Northam's wife was handing out cotton at the governor's mansion. Things are getting normalized that are very scary, folks. And the list keeps going. On Friday, College of Charleston students walked out of class to protest the school administration's slow response to a video shot during a first-year experience class, which featured slavery jokes and racist slurs. A police officer in Boulder, Colorado, was placed on administrative leave after a video went viral of him drawing his gun on a black student who works and lives at a property who was picking up trash in front of his house. So that's a new one, picking up trash while black. Nothing is sacred or safe. So again, we went through a lot, and we're going to go through now some of the other things happening at our border, but I just want to point out the prevalence and the number of stories we're seeing each week. Even if this stuff, we've always had, this darkness and this hatred in this country, but it's surfaced now, and it's just becoming so much more normal each week. That we're covering in the weekly list. So that's, I just want to raise alarm bells. It's happening in all our communities, the importance of speaking out and countering this. On Saturday, NBC News reported 29 parents who had been deported to Central America by immigration officers returned to the southern border to demand asylum and reunification with their children. 27 children in all are in custody. The youngest is 5 years old, some separated from their parents for more than a year. So that's our everyday racism. And one other point I want to make is the complicity of the Trump regime directly in these acts, what our DHS has done at the border, what Wilbur Ross was trying to do to suppress the vote, what happened in Georgia to suppress the vote. So even if we have citizens acting out, which is a lot of what we document in everyday racism, there's also been actual policy attempts, if not for our judicial branch, again and again, or rights and protections being taken away, or money or funding being taken away in the case of abortion clinics that refer to get an abortion even. So again, the steps that happen week by week in this regime to take away rights and protections from marginalized communities and women. Now let's get into the week. On Sunday, Trump tweeted, quote, "After more than 2 years of presidential harassment, the only thing that has been proven is the Democrats and other broke the law." Trump also tweeted that Michael Cohen's testimony was, quote, "given by a liar to reduce his prison time," adding Cohen's just written book manuscript showed it's a lie. Cohen's lawyer said the manuscript Trump references does not exist. Trump also tweeted, quote, "I am an innocent man being persecuted by some very bad, conflicted, and corrupt people in a witch hunt," adding, "the investigation is only because I won the election." So, folks, I'm going to go through Trump's tweets and some of his statements. We talked in the beginning of the show about the number of lies now escalating each day. It's important to understand what we lived through when people listen back to this decades from now, what we were internalizing week after week, these lies and continued propaganda statements by him. On Sunday, House Judiciary Chair Gerald Nadler told This Week his committee will be issuing documents. When asked if he thought Trump obstructed justice, Nadler responded, "Yes, I do." On Sunday, Senate Intelligence Ranking Democrat Mark Warner told Meet the Press his committee has found enormous amounts of evidence of potential collusion between Trump and Russia during the 2016 election. That counters what Trump has been tweeting, which is that Burr has said there was so far no collusion. That's the exact opposite message that we are getting from Warner, who's the ranking Democrat. On Sunday, House Intelligence Chair Adam Schiff told Face the Nation that his committee has uncovered both, quote, direct evidence and, quote, abundant circumstantial evidence of a Trump campaign colluding with Russia. On Sunday in the evening, Trump tweeted, quote, presidential harassment by crazed Democrats at the highest level in history and the most vicious and corrupt mainstream media any president has endured. He also tweeted, yet the most successful 2 years, adding, we are winning in capital letters big and the envy of the world. So that's how we started off the week. And then Monday, we woke up to an expose by Jane Mayer in The New Yorker. She reported on ties between Trump and Fox News. And again, as I mentioned at the open, an expert that she interviewed said it is the closest our country has come to having state TV. Since Trump took office, he has given 42 interviews to Fox News, 7 to Sean Hannity alone, while only giving 10 to the 3 major television networks combined and giving none to CNN. Mayer also reported, citing information compiled by left-leaning watchdog group Media Matters, that Trump has parroted lines from Fox News shows more than 200 times on Twitter since August 2018. In addition to Bill Shine, who is, or was, we're going to talk about that, Deputy Chief of Staff for Communications for Trump, other ex-Fox News alumni, it's Fox in the House, who worked for Trump, include Ben Carson, John Bolton, KT McFarlane, Heather Nauert, who was in and now is out, Hope Hicks, and Sebastian Gorka. Bill Shine, who was complicit in the workplace culture of cover-ups, payoffs, and victim intimidation relating to sexual assault, is still being paid millions from Fox News while collecting a paycheck from the White House. Trump frequently retweets claims of Fox News during his executive time, quote-unquote, although Press Secretary Sarah Sanders has stopped doing daily press briefings, she is appearing on Fox News very frequently. Mayer also reported prior to the network's presidential debate, Fox employees may have alerted Trump that Megyn Kelly was going to ask him tough questions, including on his alleged mistreatment of women. Fox News also reported that a reporter named Diane Falzone had the story about Stormy Daniels, but that Fox News, her producer, killed it ahead of the election, telling her, good reporting, kiddo, but Rupert wants Donald Trump to win, so just let it go. Wow. And then another big bombshell from this story, in the long list of bombshells, Mayer also reported that in an Oval Office meeting with John Kelly, Trump pressured Gary Cohn to tell the DOJ to block the AT&T-Time Warner merger over Trump's ire against CNN. Cohn told Kelly not to follow through. I had been saying this for, what is it, since it happened. It just made no sense that the DOJ was trying to block it and then went on appeal to try to block it. And now we know that it was Trump being a little pissy boy over CNN. So that happens where? In authoritarian regimes. But more on that story. On Tuesday, the Washington Post reported in a letter responding to Senator Elizabeth Warren and Representative Jayapal, T-Mobile acknowledged it had spent $195,000 at the Trump Hotel DC after announcing a merger with Sprint. T-Mobile spent 14% of its DC expenditures over 10 months at the Trump Hotel DC. The T-Mobile-Sprint mega-merger will require approval of the DOJ and the Federal Communications Commission. So just to back up what happened there, Trump tried to break up a merger because he was pissed off at CNN. He had told at the time, trip down memory lane, Time Warner, they needed to spin off CNN in order for the merger to go through. And other trip down memory lane, around that time, Fox News had said they would be willing to buy CNN. And then to counter that, you have in real life, the company T-Mobile and their mega merger making a decision, a corporate decision to spend money patronizing Trump's personal interest, the Trump Hotel DC, because they want to have the best chance of having their merger go through. This doesn't happen in democracies. It happens in our version of democracy under Trump, however. More fallout from Jane Mayer's story. Chairman Tom Perez, who is the chairman of the DNC, said they would bar Fox News from hosting or televising a candidate debate for the party's 2020 primary election, a highly unusual rebuke. Perez said Fox News is not in a position to host a fair and neutral debate for our candidates, citing the reporting of the inappropriate relationship between Trump and the network. On Wednesday, Trump tweeted, quote, "Democrats just blocked Fox News from holding debate," adding, "I think I'll do the same thing with fake news networks and the radical left Democrats in the general election." On Friday, just as a follow-up, the lawyer for Diane Falzone issued a statement demanding Fox release her client from the non-disclosure agreement so she can talk about getting the Stormy Daniels story before the 2016 election. So sort of these bombs blowing up for Trump every which way. And we'll be talking about more of them. On Tuesday, the Washington Post reported that in 2011, shortly after Trump challenged Barack Obama to show his record, the headmaster at New York Military Academy, which Trump attended in high school, was instructed to bury Trump's record. The academy superintendent told the Post some trustee gave him a directive to hand over Trump's records to them, but he refused, instead moving them to a different location. He resigned in 2013 and is not sure what happened after. On the campaign trail, Trump often overinflated his academic success in high school and college. Trump was not an academic standout at the academy. We were talking about Roger Stone in the last couple of weeks. On Sunday, Roger Stone posted an image on Instagram, which contained an image of him under the words, "Who Framed Roger Stone?" The post was up for roughly 24 hours before Stone apparently deleted it. On Monday, Mueller's team notified Judge Amy Berman Jackson of the post, saying it could be in violation of the judge's gag order, which covers posts on social media, Twitter, Instagram, or any other social media. The judge blasted Stone in court over his new book as well, which we talked about last week, that criticizes Mueller and demanded that Stone explain his efforts to comply with the gag order by March 11th. Judge Jackson also chastised Stone's lawyers for misrepresenting to her that the publication of the book titled The Myth of Russian Collusion was imminent after they admitted the book is already on sale. It's just unbelievable what these people, they are testing this judge. Judge Jackson will decide whether the book release and or the Instagram post violate her gag order and justify consequences for Stone. A status conference for Stone was previously scheduled for March 14th. So we'll be hearing about that this week. On Monday, Jerome Corsi retracted an article he wrote in 2018 for InfoWars and apologized. The article claimed murdered Democratic National Committee Chair Seth Rich was behind the leaked DNC emails to WikiLeaks. Corsi also tweeted telling followers, "I'm not being threatened," and wrote, "As a Christian gentleman, I have sympathy for the suffering of Seth Rich's family." On Monday, former lead counsel for Trump, Ty Cobb, told an NBC News podcast that Mueller is an American hero, and parting ways with Trump added, "I don't feel the investigation is a witch hunt." Cobb also said he disagreed with the more confrontational approach being taken by Trump's current legal team, saying it wouldn't have been his strategy, and added he does not feel the same way about Mueller. On Monday, the House Judiciary Committee announced it was sending 81 letters seeking information and documents from individuals and groups relating to Trump's campaign, businesses, transition team, and the regime. Jerry Nadler said in a statement, "Trump has evaded accountability for his near-daily attacks on our basic legal, ethical, and constitutional rules and norms." When asked by reporters Monday if he would cooperate, Trump told reporters, "I cooperate all the time with everybody," adding, "No collusion, it's a hoax. Recipients have until March 18th to respond." Later, Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said in a statement that Nadler and the Democrats have, quote, "embarked on this fishing expedition," adding, "they are terrified that their false narrative on Russia is crumbling." On Monday, Representative Adam Schiff said he has hired Daniel Goldman, a veteran prosecutor in the Southern District of New York, with experience fighting Russian organized crime, to lead his investigation of his committee's investigation into the Trump regime. Goldman will join two other former federal prosecutors on Schiff's team. The House Intelligence Committee will be aggressively investigating whether collusion occurred between the Trump campaign and Russia. That's how they split up the world. That's what Schiff's committee is going to be doing. On Monday, Fox News host Sean Hannity blasted the House investigation, calling it a, quote, gruesome display of modern-day McCarthyism. And then, true to Jane Mayer's story, on Tuesday, Trump parroted Hannity's comments, tweeting, quote, we the people will now be subjected to the biggest display of modern-day McCarthyism, adding, which is the widest fishing net expedition. Trump also started undermining the 2020 election, tweeting Democrats were, quote, vicious and totally showing their cards, adding they are, quote, trying to win in 2020 that they know they cannot legitimately win. Trump's 2020 campaign said in a statement, quote, these desperate Democrats know they cannot beat Trump in 2020, saying instead they are on a disgraceful witch hunt to topple the will of the American people. On Tuesday, former Trump campaign aide Michael Caputo said he does not plan to cooperate with a House inquiry. And some of the other 881 folks who had been sent letters are coming up with a joint strategy of resisting requests for testimony. Just in terms of polling, a Quinnipiac poll found that 64% of registered voters believe Trump had committed a crime before entering office, and 45% think he committed crimes while serving in office. After Cohen's congressional testimony last week, 50% believe Cohen and 35% believe Trump. And this is a shocking number, folks. Just 30% of Americans believe Trump is honest, the lowest rating in the poll since Trump took office. On Tuesday, House Oversight Chair Elijah Cummings said the White House refused to hand over documents relating to security clearances to his committee. Instead, White House counsel offered a briefing. On Wednesday, CNN reported Trump pressured John Kelly. Last week we talked about Kushner, but CNN reported this week that Trump pressured John Kelly and the White House counsel Don McGahn to grant security clearance to Ivanka after concerns were raised by the personnel office. After both Kelly and McGahn refused, Trump granted Ivanka and Jared security clearance on his own. 3 weeks ago, Ivanka told ABC News that Trump had no involvement in her or her husband's clearance. On Friday, Axios reported a White House source leaked documents to the House Oversight Committee related to Kushner and Ivanka's security clearance after the White House rejected the request. And this is just a little weird, odd and end. NBC News reported Matthew Whitaker, remember him, who had been serving as the acting attorney general and then was supposed to transition to a senior counselor job after William Barr took over as attorney general. He has now completely left the Justice Department. Isn't that strange? His next move was unclear. He just kind of left town. Well, not town literally, but left the DOJ. So let's keep an eye on Matt Whitaker and what's going on there. On Tuesday, the Wall Street Journal reported Trump plans to nominate Jesse Liu to the number three spot at the DOJ, replacing Rachel Brand. And I was trying to think, when did Rachel Brand leave to go to Walmart? It seems like it was just yesterday. It was actually 13 months ago. That position has been empty for 13 months. You left February 2018, which again to me was like how I have no concept of time anymore in the Trump era. That could be like 2 months ago. It could be 10 years ago. It's just time spectrum is just totally lost in this era. And her previous position, she had served on Trump's transition team at the DOJ and acknowledged she has had an in-person interview with Trump before he nominated her, which is something that is highly unusual. But again, another story that just gets lost in the chaos. On Tuesday, the New York Times reported New York State regulators have subpoenaed Aon PLC, Trump's insurance broker, following Cohen's testimony last week that Trump exaggerated his wealth to insurance companies. The 9-page subpoena served by a state agency, which is part of Andrew Cuomo's administration, he's our governor of New York, demands materials relating to Aon's business with Trump and the Trump Organization dating back to 2009. Shortly after that, Trump tweeted in capital letters, "presidential harassment!" exclamation point. On Tuesday, Trump told reporters, "it's too bad," adding, "instead of doing infrastructure, doing healthcare, instead of doing many things that they should be doing, they want to play games," that being the Democrats. On Tuesday, but we weren't done yet, after those tweets, the New York Times reported it had obtained 6 checks written by Trump while in office for $35,000 each to Michael Cohen, one of 11 such payments made to Cohen to reimburse for hush money payments. The dates of the checks revealed the parallel lives Trump was leading while in office and conducting the country's business while paying for efforts to keep his affair out of the public eye in the run-up to the 2016 election. If you click on that story in the weekly list, the New York Times takes you through every time Trump wrote one of these 6 checks, what he was doing that day. One day he was meeting with Angela Merkel, that first meeting where he infamously forgot to shake her hand or looked away when she offered her hand to shake. He was signing a check that day. Cohen claimed the checks started in February 2017 after a meeting in the Oval Office. The first checks for January and February were for $70,000 and was signed February 14th by Donald Jr. and Alan Weisselberg, the infamous accountant. On Tuesday, but we're not done. This is this crazy week. The Wall Street Journal reported a lawyer for Michael Cohen, Stephen Ryan, approached Trump's attorneys about the possibility of a pardon after the FBI raided Cohen's properties. Trump's attorneys, including Jay Sekulow, Rudy Giuliani, and Joanna Hendon, dismissed the idea of a pardon. However, Rudy Giuliani left open the possibility that Trump could grant one in the future. Ryan also approached Trump Organization General Counsel Alan Garten and an outside attorney, Alan Fortes. Ryan left the impression that if Cohen could not rely on a pardon, he might cooperate with prosecutors. Conversations among parties on this topic are being probed by the House Judiciary Committee and were part of their document request by Nadler's committee on Monday. On Tuesday, NBC News reported House and Senate Intelligence Committees are also investigating the pardon discussions. Then on Wednesday, further news, the Wall Street Journal reported Cohen directed Ryan to ask for the pardon from Trump, contradicting his testimony just last week in Congress, where Cohen said, quote, "I have never asked for, nor would I accept, a pardon from Mr. Trump." I mean, all these, all thick as thieves. On Thursday, Cohen attorney Lanny Davis tried to explain this, saying prior to Michael Cohen's decision to leave the Joint Defense Group and tell the truth on July 2, 2018, Michael was open to an ongoing dangling of a possible pardon. On Wednesday, Cohen gave the House Intelligence Committee documentation showing edits to the false written statement he delivered to Congress in 2017 about the timing of the Trump Tower Moscow project. Cohen claimed in his testimony that Trump attorney Jay Sekulow made changes to his statement to the House and Senate Intelligence Committees and that it was reviewed by numerous lawyers, including Abby Lowell. On Thursday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi told reporters Trump's children are fair game for House committees, saying they are investigating certain subjects. Whoever falls into that net falls into that net. On Thursday, ABC News reported congressional lawmakers are planning to ask Donald Jr. to return to testify about the Trump Tower Moscow project after he said he knew, quote, very little about the deal in prior testimony under oath. So again, I'm just going through a lot of different things, but all these doors are opening. As we said at the open, Chairman Cummings described it. I'm going to get his exact words because I want to quote him precisely. He described it as a roadmap. And the roadmap is exactly what we're seeing now as we open more and more investigations with more to come. On Thursday, Cohen sued the Trump Organization, saying the company is obligated to pay both his legal fees and money he owes in a criminal sentence. Cohen said that the Trump organization stopped covering his fees, which they are contractually obligated to do after he started cooperating. On Friday, Fox News reported Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee traveled to New York to meet with Cohen at least four times for over 10 hours before last week's public testimony. Now, just back to the general business of our Senate. On Monday, Senate Leader Mitch McConnell said he would stop passage of a resolution, that he could not stop passage of a resolution to block Trump's national emergency declaration, after Rand Paul became the fourth to say he would vote for it. Remember, last week, the House voted, including 13 Republicans, to block Trump's emergency declaration. Now it looks like it can pass in the Senate as well. Senator Rand Paul said as many as 10 Republicans may vote for the measure in a serious rebuke to Trump and a rare example of Congress standing up to try to rein in his power. Trump is likely to veto the measure. I just want to point out, declaring a national emergency when there is not actually one, declaring a national emergency after Congress has turned down funds as a way to get funds. There was no precedent for this happening when it was announced a few weeks ago, but noticed in the chaos how little media coverage this storyline is getting. On Tuesday, Senator Lindsey Graham said Republicans opposing Trump's national emergency declaration are, quote, playing with fire. So everybody's asking, what do they have on Lindsey Graham? He's the gift that keeps giving for Trump. Now I want to talk about our economy. There were some shocking numbers out this week. On Tuesday, the Treasury Department announced the federal budget deficit grew by 77% in the first 4 months of the fiscal year 2019 amid falling revenues caused by Trump's tax cuts and higher spending. Just to back up, for those of you who aren't big on the economy or follow these follow the nomenclature, federal budget deficit is our U.S. budget deficit. And we're going to talk about another deficit shortly, but that's sort of domestically how much we have borrowed as a country. So again, that grew by 77% year over year, from a number of $176 billion to $310 billion. That in an absolute growth, that's just enormous. White House Economic Counsel Larry Kudlow, who knows better, anyone who ever watched his show, acknowledged on Fox that the national debt has inched up a bit, but said growth solves all problems. Remember when the Republican Party was supposed to be the party of fiscal austerity? On Wednesday, General Motors closed a massive assembly plant in Lordstown, Ohio, a plant that had operated for 50 years. GM also plans to close plants in Detroit, Ontario, a transmission plant in Michigan, and near Baltimore. But as with this closing, it's the first time General Motors will not be manufacturing cars in Ohio in half a century. On Wednesday, at the American Workforce Policy Advisory Board meeting at the White House, Trump called Apple Inc. CEO Tim Cook, Tim Apple. Previously, Trump had called Lockheed Martin CEO Marilyn Lockheed. Trump later tried to explain away that he actually said Tim Apple Cook, but no, he actually called him Tim Apple, and there is precedent. On Thursday, the Commerce Department announced the U.S. trade deficit in goods with the rest of the world in 2018 rose to $891 billion. This is the largest U.S. trade deficit in goods in the history of our country. Trump had bragged and campaigned on bringing jobs back and fair trade for our country. I have to say again, this is the biggest U.S. goods trade deficit. As opposed to budget deficit, trade is our trade deficit with other countries, how much we're importing versus exporting. This is our biggest deficit in the history of our country on goods. The overall trade deficit grew 12.5% from 2017. American exports to China slumped nearly 50% in December from a year prior. So keep an eye on the economy, folks. Where she blows, there she blows. On Wednesday, Secretary of Homeland Security Nielsen testified before the House Homeland Security Committee about Trump's zero tolerance policy, Nielsen's first hearing since Democrats took control. Nielsen backed Trump's emergency declaration, saying, quote, this is not a manufactured crisis. This is truly an emergency, and claiming the number of immigrants entering the U.S. illegally has doubled since a year ago, which is something different than she said a few months ago. But hey, also Wednesday, DHS Acting Inspector General John Kelly said in a separate hearing he has opened three investigations into the Trump regime's immigration policies, including whether they properly tracked separated children. The Attorney General will also look into whether deported parents were given the opportunity to take children with them. Nielsen told lawmakers on that when she was asked, to the best of my knowledge, every parent was afforded that option. When Nanette Berrigan, representative from California, asked, you let kids be separated without tracking them. Do you know how outrageous that is? You have no feeling, no compassion, no empathy here. Nielsen did not respond. On Thursday, AP reported that the Pentagon may use $1 billion in leftover funds set aside for military pay and pension accounts to pay for Trump's wall. The funds are currently available since recruitment is down. CNBC reported the firm owned by Trump's former longtime bodyguard, Keith Schiller, was paid $225,000 by the Republican National Committee for security consulting since he left the White House in September 2017. That's roughly $15,000 per month. It was unclear if or what work Schiller is actually doing. Sounds an awful lot like hush money, doesn't it? $15,000 a month for doing nothing. That's good work if you can get it. On Friday, The Guardian reported Trump's inauguration committee took money from shell companies tied to foreigners. The Guardian identified at least three cases of this. And again, it's illegal for non-resident foreigners to donate to political campaigns, including the inaugurations. On Thursday, the House voted 407-23 on a measure to condemn all forms of hate, sparked by a fierce debate between Democrats, following Representative Ilhan Omar, comments which were viewed as anti-Semitic. Trump, seeking to capitalize on the infighting, tweeted Wednesday, quote, it is shameful that House Democrats won't take a stronger stand against anti-Semitism in their conference. Trump, meanwhile, has been silent to the same anti-Semitism in the GOP and has trafficked in anti-Semitic tropes on his Twitter account very frequently. Republicans were also silent this week about Representative Jim Jordan's tweets in which he replaced the letter S with a dollar sign in spelling Tom Steyer's names. Okay, now we had some major news on Thursday when the Judge Ellis, sentenced Paul Manafort that shook our country. So I'm just going to go through it, but it's, again, here we are, chaos. But it was at the time, I'm pausing because it was a very important story and our country was very shaken by this. Judge Ellis III sentenced Paul Manafort to 47 months in prison. He's already served time, so basically he would be out in 22 months. Some in the Trump regime were joking that he'll be out in time for the re-election campaign. Ha ha. Ellis dismissed sentencing guidelines, which suggested 19 to 24 years, saying they were vindictive and way out of whack for a 69-year-old Manafort. Legal experts criticized Ellis's sentence, saying wealthy white-collar criminals often receive lighter sentences because the judge empathizes with them. Manafort arrived in court gray-haired and in a wheelchair. The judge had predicted some pushback. However, his sentencing provoked a social media firestorm, including public defenders, prosecutors, and ordinary citizens, citing racial disparity in sentencing as well. Observers also noted Judge Ellis showed his distaste for the special counsel throughout the proceedings. And hopefully Judge Amy Berman Jackson will save us. She's due to sentence Manafort next week on two conspiracy charges. On Friday, celebrating in a series of morning tweets, Trump said, thank you, Fox and friends. Great show. He did not publicly change course despite earlier reporting by Jane Mayer on his ties to the network. Trump also tweeted, I cannot believe the level of dishonesty in the media. It is totally out of control, but we are winning. Adding in another tweet, presidential harassment, exclamation point, all capital letters. Trump also falsely claimed in a tweet, both the judge and the lawyer in the Paul Manafort case stated loudly that there was no collusion with Russia, adding the witch hunt hoax continues. Judge Ellis actually said Manafort was not before the court for anything having to do with collusion with Russia, with the Russian government or the election, but that doesn't stop Trump from lying. He has to keep up 22 lies a day. That's a lot of work. After disappointing job numbers came out on Friday, also only 20,000 jobs were added for the month of February, Trump quoted Fox and Friends. Stuart Varney tweeting, "This is as good a time as I can remember to be an American worker." Trump also tweeted, "Bad lawyer and fraudster Michael Cohen said under oath he did not ask for a pardon. And his lawyer totally contradicted him, adding, he directly asked me for pardon. I said no, he lied again." Trump also claimed Cohen lied under oath to Congress about wanting a job in the administration, saying, quote, "He also wanted to work at the White House badly. He lied." Cohen responded on Twitter, "Just another set of lies by Trump," adding, on that day it was International Women's Day, Trump should apologize for his own lies and dirty deeds to Karen McDougal and Stephanie Clifford. On Friday, before departing for Alabama, Trump told reporters he felt very badly for Paul Manafort, which sounds like code for a pardon coming. Trump also repeated the false claim that the judge said there was no collusion with Russia. It is a collusion hoax. That is, again, this was not what this case was about. When asked about a pardon for Manafort, Trump said, quote, "I haven't discussed it." He also claimed Cohen asked directly for a pardon. Trump also accused Democrats of becoming the anti-Israel, anti-Jewish party. This is the man who, when white supremacists marched in Charlottesville and said Jews will not replace us, said there were good people on both sides, but the Democrats are the anti-Jewish party. Visiting Alabama, Trump signed Bibles while visiting a relief site. The act of signing Bibles drew mixed reviews from clergy, with some saying it was inappropriate, while others said Trump was appropriate, while others said Trump was wrong to do so. And then while that was going on Friday, ex-Fox News executive Bill Shein abruptly resigned from the White House after 9 months on the job, which, by the way, makes him the longest-serving communications director. He lasted 9 months. This is Trump's fifth communication director on the job. Shein said he will now work as a senior advisor on the Trump 2020 re-election. Also Friday, Air Force Secretary Heather Wilson resigned to become president of University of Texas at El Paso. Wilson was seen as a candidate to replace Jim Mattis as in the still unfilled defense secretary spot. Just need to say that spot is unfilled. Chief of staff is unfilled. Now communications director is unfilled. See how that works? On Friday, Trump formally nominated former oil and gas lobbyist David Bernhardt to succeed Ryan Zinke at the Interior Department. Okay, so again, Bernhardt is a former oil and gas lobbyist. We spoke a couple of weeks ago about Andrew Wheeler, who is a former coal lobbyist, is now running the Environmental Protection Agency. This is happening right in front of our eyes, but as you can see, folks, it's chaos. It's hard to focus. It's hard to keep track of all these things happening, because we have lies and then we have distractions. Like on Friday, Trump allies on the House Judiciary Committee revived allegations of FBI misconduct, publicly releasing a transcript of an interview in past August of DOJ official Bruce Orr. Later Friday, Trump accused again Michael Cohen. He again attacked him, quoting Mike Turner, a Republican representative, saying the only time that Michael Cohen told the truth is when he pled that he is guilty. Trump also added, "No collusion, and I did not tell him to lie." And another big story. Again, we have so many of these each and every week, which is why none of them get any attention. On Friday, the Miami Herald reported Li Yang, the founder of Orchids of Asia Day Spa, remember them? Posed with Trump for a photograph at a Super Bowl party 19 days before Robert Kraft, owner of the Patriots, was arrested for soliciting prostitution at Orchids of Asia Day Spa. Yang said she no longer owns the spa, which has also been accused of human trafficking. Yang also posted a photo with and signed by Trump on her social media from a fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago on March 2, 2018. She since took it down. Mother Jones reported Yang and her husband, Zubin Gong, started GY Investments LLC in 2017, which on its website, in mostly Chinese, offers services for clients looking to make high-level connections in the U.S. Oh my God, you cannot make this stuff up! Yang's bio photo on the website is a photo with Trump, and it's signed by Trump, and says she is a member of the Presidential Fundraising Committee. Yang donated $42,000 to Trump's PAC and $16,000 to his campaign, but she's getting paid back for that very nicely. Yang's Facebook page since taken down, including photos of her with Donald Jr., Representative Matt Gaetz, RNC Chair Ronna McDaniel, Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao, and Florida Governor Republican Ron DeSantis, among others. The GY U.S. Investments webpage also lists upcoming events at Mar-a-Lago. Photos show Chinese executives at the Mar-a-Lago New Year's Eve event, mingling with Trump family members, including Eric and Donald Jr. Ugh. ProPublica reported on another case of Trump's buddies at Mar-a-Lago being given insider access. Albert Huzuri, a dentist from Scranton, Pennsylvania, who Trump had previously called out at a rally for being a good golfer. Huzuri sent Trump a note on Mar-a-Lago stationery with the salutation, "Dear King," as a favor to the 163,000 member American Dental Association relating to veterans care and Native American Indian care. Trump wrote on the note, "Sent to David S. at the VA," meaning David Shulkin, then head of the Veterans Affairs Department. Next to the Mar-a-Lago logo, a Trump aide sign, stamped, "The President has seen." And then Friday, as we closed out the week, an interview with Al Jazeera, Eric Prince admitted he attended an August 2016 Trump Tower, previously reported meeting by the Times. You can read about it in Week 80 that also included Donald Jr. and George Nader. Reportedly, according to the Times at this meeting, Nader said the UAE and Saudi Arabia wanted to help Trump win the White House. When asked why he did not disclose the meeting to Congress, Prince said they may have gotten the transcript wrong. So that's week 121 on the books, folks. Keep your hats on. There's so much news coming. Watch for Roger Stone this coming week back in court. Hopefully with any luck, we'll be singing Lock Him Up. Until next week, have a good one. Take care.